Hello, welcome to Pyramid Podcast, where freelancers discuss all things the English football pyramid. On today's episode, we review Lee Carsley's first two games in charge of England. We'll look ahead to the weekend's Premier League action, including the North London Derby. We'll preview some massive EFL fixtures, including Leeds versus Burnley and Birmingham versus Wrexham. And we'll finish with Laura, who talks to us about YTFC's recent results in the National League. I'm your host, Alex Murphy, and once again, I'm joined by Tom Gallagher and Tom Lawrence. Boys, let's start with England and Tomo. Two games, two wins, two clean sheets, but thoughts on the start of Lee Carsley's reign?
Pretty positive, I would say, overall, but it's hard to sort of judge him too much when you're coming up against Ireland and Finland, to be honest. We didn't have like a full fettle of attackers, so he was able to play the likes of Anthony Gordon, Jack Grealish in the 10, and actually, one of the sort of the biggest takeaways I would say is that he was almost putting round pegs in round holes. So Trent played right back. Do you know what I mean? Something like a small shift that we did. I think we mentioned it in the previous podcast where we said even in the squad lineups on Twitter, they had Trent down as a defender. They had, I think they had Foden down as a centre mid. And small little changes that make you think that sort of Carsley is doing things slightly different to Southgate. So yeah, that's positive, I guess, but there's not really too much you can read into those games, just given the quality of the opposition we faced. And obviously there'll be harder tests down the line. The thing is with the England national setup is we're at that level now where essentially Carsley won't be judged until he gets to the knockouts of a World Cup or Euros, because we're pretty much all but guaranteed to sort of get there with the squad that we have, like managerless. So it's difficult to judge games like that, to be honest, because they're that much better than the opposition.
That's a really good point. And Laurie, what do you think like Lee Carsley's metric is to get the job permanently? I know he's currently doing it on an interim basis, but he's going to play six Nations Leagues games, which the hardest test is going to be Greece away, which I think is the next game. But let's have it right. He should be six from six and win all games comfortably. If he does that, is that enough to just get him the England job? Like, do you think there's a particular style of play or something that he's got to show to win the FA over to give it to him permanently?
I don't think there's any chance that he doesn't get the England job. I think he's definitely got it. Like you say, you can't fail with England until you get to a knockout of a major tournament, and by that time he'll have the job. I just think he's on a win-win as well. Like, everyone in the country knows what the kind of majority of fans want to see from England, and he's able to sort of put round pegs in round holes and play Gordon on the left and Grealish in the hole and Alexander-Arnold at right back in games that we're going to get win by default, regardless of who we're playing. So he can do all the things that he knows the fans want to see and know that we're going to look fairly good doing it because we're playing lesser opposition than Southgate's been used to in all of these major tournaments. So I don't think there's any chance Lee Carsley doesn't get the job. I don't think you could possibly fail with England until you get to a knockout game of a major tournament. And I guess we'll see his credentials under the microscope of a major tournament in America in 2026, which I still think is ridiculous. So unless Pep Guardiola sticks his hand up and say, yeah, I'll come and manage it, I think it will definitely be Lee Carsley taking us to the World Cup in the Northern America.
Tommy, you touched there on Grealish playing in the 10. Do you think like Carsley's having a word with Jack Grealish now saying, look, I want you to be starting in there in the World Cup. This is your position now to nail down, but you've got to start playing more club football, where Pep kind of used him as like a secondary option as a left winger, and you got KDB who kind of owns that 10 role for City. Do you think Grealish is going to have words with Pep about getting more game time?
No, Grealish won't be having words with Pep. Pep will be having words with Grealish. But no, I think maybe Carsley's hand was forced in that scenario a little bit, just because I think, well, Foden and Palmer pulled out, didn't they? Bellingham wasn't there. I would say those are the three, our top three options for that number 10 position. So, yeah, so Grealish just did a job. And he played quite well, to be fair. But, like, in a similar aspect of England overall, you can't really judge Grealish's performances against, like, the likes of Ireland and Finland just because of the level of opposition. it will be interesting to see the next international break, what Carsley does, what changes he makes, because you expect the likes of Foden, Palmer and Bellingham to come back in, and we'll have a bit of a stronger squad if, obviously, injury-wise, hopefully they will come back. And then it'll be interesting to see how he fits all of the best players into the team, or whether who he drops, etc. Because that was the big question mark over Southgate over the summer, was can Foden and Bellingham play together? Is Foden a left winger? Those kind of questions. And obviously, during this international break, those questions weren't asked because no, like Bellingham and Foden weren't there.
And the end of Kyle Walker's international career at right back, with Trent playing as he did both games?
I don't know. I don't really know, to be honest. Like, if Kyle Walker goes and plays for Man City in a title-winning team and does really well, then I'm sure he'll be in the squad. I think I've listened to a couple of his podcast episodes. He's got a new podcast now, hasn't he? And he said he would never retire, like come out and retire like Trippier's done. But I do think, look, he's 34 and Trent's, what, 25, 26 now? He's coming into his prime. He's obviously class, Trent. And I think the slight difference between Carsley and Southgate is that Carsley sees him as a right back.
Yeah.
So
the other thing on that one is that obviously Walker will be 36 by the time the World Cup comes around. Yeah. That's another 2 years. For me, he already looked a little bit like he was getting a bit leggy in the Euros. I mean, he got gassed a couple of times more than I've ever seen him get gassed before. So if you add another 2 years onto that, you're probably right to be looking ahead to who might be right back in 2 years rather than now. But if I'm Carsley, this is a free hit. He's got the England job off the back of a manager who's done quite well, but everyone knows where he lacked, and that was basically pulling the trigger instead of being as pragmatic as he was. I just play 4-1-4-1 like everyone wants. Play Rice, Bellingham and Foden. Play a couple of wingers, whoever, Saka and Gordon with Kane up front. Play Trent right back and fucking go for it. And like you say, you're going to get to the knockouts regardless, and then we'll see how it shapes up. And if he loses, he can say, well, that's what everyone wanted. Everyone was crying out for Bellingham and Foden in those 2-8s or 2-10s, whatever you want to call it. Everyone wanted Trent at right back. So that's what I would do if I was Carsley, and it would probably be quite fun to watch if he does that. And like you say, if it fails, then he can turn around and say, well, look, I did what everyone else wanted me to do. So you weren't happy with Southgate's 2 finals in 6 years and that sort of thing. And fair play to the next guy.
Yeah, good point. And Tommy, just to finish off on England, I know it kind of goes without saying, and he's expected to do it against this level of opposition, but 100 caps for Harry Kane, another 2 goals, ruthless finishes. Wore his golden Skechers boots as well and got the brace in him. But he's actually starting to, I noticed they brought up a graphic of the goals. He's starting to pull away now, and he looks like he's going to set a number of England goals that potentially certainly not going to be broken for a good number of years.
Yeah, and Harry Kane, look, he's done it year after year after year. So you kind of expect him to just carry on doing it. But Laurie made a good point there about Kyle Walker. And actually, we're looking at this England team sort of for 2026, that's 2 years down the line, and Harry Kane will be 33, I think, or maybe 34. So it'd be interesting to, but that, like, Ollie Watkins, I would say, is his only real competition. He started the season poorly. And I'm just looking at the sort of the youngsters coming through, and we're really solely reliant on Harry Kane. And we're really lucky to have a player like him. I mean, he had to score 2 goals just to wear a pair of fucking golden Skechers, though, I'm not going to lie. But yeah, look, you just fully expect that. He come in with a lot of criticism for his summer performances. And to be fair, rightly so, he was piss poor, really, wasn't he? I think he might have been carrying an injury. And obviously this international break, he looked like he's overcome that. If he can stay fit, like, we should laud and applaud having a player like Harry Kane. Every single country in the world would want a Harry Kane in their team.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, actually, because obviously Ivan Toney's gone out to Saudi. Watkins obviously started this season poorly, but I don't know if he's like the natural replacement for Kane. I'm struggling to think of like a natural crop of like English strikers coming through, or who's going to be the next one to break into the England setup. Be interesting to see who comes through.
Kane will be starting for England for the next 3 tournaments. He'll be going until he's 37, 38. Like Giroud for France. He's not. Yeah, he's already adapted the game when he was about 27. And although he had a, you know, a poor tournament, no one scored more goals than him in the tournament. He got, I think he won the European Golden Boot, the Champions League Golden Boot, the Bundesliga Golden Boot. I saw Graham Souness the other day. He said, well, the pace of the Bundesliga is a level down. That's why he scored all those goals. But he did also score 200 in the Premier League before flying out to Munich. So I think we should take that into account and remember that we've got a very good striker there. So it would be nice to have some more competition, but I think we'll be in safe hands with our centre forward as long as he's not injured for the next sort of half a decade.
Nice. And probably a nice segue into a fixture that he used to always score in, Harry Kane, and that's the North London Derby that's coming up on Sunday. And Laura, Arsenal would have probably gone into this as favourites beforehand, and they might still do with the bookies. But with Declan Rice suspended after his red against Brighton and Odegaard spraining or twisting an ankle on international duty and missing the game as well, I just feel like this is now a bit of a different proposition, this game.
Yeah, although it's early on, these are the games where your title credentials are really questioned. Because, I mean, I know Tottenham's probably a stiffer test than Chelsea at the minute, but Man City went to Chelsea and won on the opening day with no Rodri and no Foden. And Arsenal are going to have to do that with no Odegaard and no Declan Rice this weekend. It's one of those where if they come away from that with a win, I think everyone will be, you know, having them down as serious title contenders again. But it's already looking like, because they drew to Brighton last week and City look as ominous as ever, and even Liverpool in scintillating form, they can't really afford to be dropping points. And they're two key players as well. Odegaard and Declan Rice. If you ask Arsenal players which two players do you not want to lose, they'd probably be right up there with probably alongside Saliba with the two most important. So that's going to be a really interesting game. And they'll probably be hoping to capitalise on some of Tottenham's gung-ho approach. But that'll be a really tasty North London derby to get your teeth stuck into. And I think that'll be goals on Sunday.
Yeah, it's always a great fixture, isn't it, that? And I just quickly, before you ask me a question, Muff, I just want to say Pep Guardiola and Man City have got blood on their hands. Like, the fact that we're even talking about this game being, like, so important already in the title race is a joke, isn't it? And City have almost ruined the league because we're three games into the season, and it feels like if Arsenal don't win this and City win, it's like... And actually, I think next week, Arsenal go to Man City. So all of a sudden, if City then beat Arsenal there, they're what, 7 points behind?
Yeah, 7 or 8 points.
And it's like, oh, fucking hell, there's no way back after that. And it's like, it's even listening to my voice, like, come out with these like words, is just, it's depressing how good City are and just how sort of they just keep mauling teams and keep winning. And the expectations now are that if Arsenal don't get 95 points, they won't win the league. It's crazy.
Well, let's think about how they might win the game then. Obviously, they're not going to have Rice and Odegaard in midfield. But listening to some Arsenal fans, it sounds like they want sort of Jorginho and Partey in midfield. And then I guess you could drop Kai Havertz, I guess, back into like the 10 role who can play there. And then you'd have to bring one of like a Jesus or a Sterling into the team to lead the line. But I still think, Laura, if they do set up with that midfield and just play Havertz a bit deeper, and Tottenham have got that high line, they're still going to have Saka, they're still going to have Trossard, they're still going to have Martinelli, they're still going to bring Raheem Sterling into this, that they've still got enough out there with their settled defensive line to go and win.
Yeah, I forgot about Raheem Sterling, actually. What an irony that would be if he came up trumps on Sunday and helped get the Gunners 3 points when he was deemed on this podcast not good enough for Man United just 2 weeks ago. So it'd be interesting to see if Raheem can come in and make a difference there. But like I said, really interesting game to watch because Tottenham haven't had a crazy good start, have they? I mean, Ange is probably going to be under a lot more pressure early on this year than he was last year because he's a year in and he's had his feet under the table for a while now. So he's not going to want to lose that North London derby at home. And it's a sort of game that can sort of ramp up the pressure and the questions if you get beat and if you get beat badly, particularly by an Arsenal team who are a little bit depleted this weekend. So I think the best money's probably on a Desmond 2-2 draw, but it would be a big result either way if someone could come away with 3 points.
Tomo, obviously not just Arsenal in that tie, though. It's at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Tottenham started the season okay, should have won comfortably against Leicester, obviously beat Everton comprehensively and then did lose at Newcastle. But, you know, with Son and Madison, looks like he's starting to pick up a bit of turn up in form as well. They've obviously got a strong defensive back line as well with Van de Ven, Romero, people like that, Pedro Porro. They're going to want to have a say on it and get one over Arsenal early in the season.
Yeah, and this, last year, it was 2-2 at the Emirates, wasn't it? And it was 3-2 at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So it does feel like this derby, out of like all the big derbies in the Premier League and all the big games in the Premier League, this one always seems to always or more than not deliver goals. If I was Tottenham, that like the psychological boost of going into this game at home against an Arsenal without Rice and Odegaard is massive. And if you're like James Maddison, you must be rubbing your hands together. Like, and because it's at home as well, like the atmosphere is going to be electric. It's sort of okay. We did have Man United Liverpool, I suppose. But it feels like this is the first big game of the title race, obviously because it includes Arsenal. I can't look away from the Desmond Tuohill, to be honest. Like Loro, there's going to be goals. It's going to be carnage. There'll probably be a couple of red cards. And I'm really looking forward to it, to be honest.
I don't know if Dominic Solanke's back, but I've watched two of Spurs' three games. Obviously, they beat Everton, but Leicester and Newcastle, obviously, they threw away 3 points against Leicester. They should have been 5-0 up at half-time. And they absolutely dominated the game against Newcastle at St James's Park as well. So they've got a lot going right there. And again, Udogie and Porro look so ominous coming forward and taking up sort of wide positions and 10 positions for them and getting involved with the attacks. But they need to find a ruthless streak to put the ball in the back of that. Otherwise, they'll start getting done and losing points like they did at Newcastle with breakaway goals. So there's a lot going right at Tottenham, but there's a fine margin between doing well and doing poorly in terms of points if you can't finish your dinner. So I would imagine they'll be looking for Dom Solanke to come back in and start spearheading that attack a bit more sooner rather than later.
I think Richarlison's out for them, but then it's like Solanke, Van de Ven and Bissouma are all like question marks on whether they start or whether they're not going to quite sort of beat the race for it. But with those three in the side, then Spurs' chances will go up considerably. But yeah, I think we all agree, boys, going to be a very, very good game on Sunday and hopefully lots of goals and actions. Look, we won't labour the point about City. I think we've said since the conception of this podcast that they're really boring. But as my FPL side will attest to and the league position they're in, without having Haaland in it, he's got off to an absolutely flying start and fully expecting them to keep that up with a home game this weekend. But Laura, one side who maybe were a little bit like, what are they going to be like this season? An absolutely huge transition away from Klopp. But, you know, based on their performance at Old Trafford and their other performances so far as well, maybe we've got a real live third team in the title race in Liverpool.
Yeah, or even second. Like, it won't be long before they're into second favourites for the league, Liverpool, if they carry on the way that they are. We said in the last pod, the Man United one will be the first proper test because they played Ipswich and I think Brentford at home before that. But I think it feels like Arne Slot's gone in and kept a lot of the things that were right about Liverpool, but just tweaked a few things and made them even better in certain areas, particularly midfield. I mean, watching the Man United game, obviously we were in a WhatsApp group with a lot of Man United fans, so you hear a lot of despair around the way and the manner in which Man United conceded goals and possession in that game. But Liverpool, I thought they were unplayable. I thought that's the performance of the season from anyone so far, particularly like Gravenberch in midfield. You know, they've been crying out for someone to come in and sort of be the Fabinho of the peak of the Klopp era for the last few years. And I think Gravenberch maybe finding his feet last year looks like an absolute monster in there this season. And obviously the forward boys seem to be flying as they always are. Luis Diaz is starting to chip in with more goal involvements, which is needed from him. Two brilliant goals at Old Trafford and obviously Mo Salah doing what he does. When you go to Old Trafford and put in a performance like that, it's really, really hard to see them dropping points at home at the likes of Nottingham Forest like they're going to play this weekend. And before you know it, they're going to have accumulated a lot of points and be right in that title race. So another one that goes towards, is this a massive game for Arsenal this weekend? Yes, it is, because it's not just City they've got to contend with, but it's Arne Slot's Liverpool that look, dare I say it, improved from Klopp's crop of last year.
Yeah, they're absolutely flying. They've got Forest at home, say, this weekend. City have got Brentford at home. Fully expecting both of them to do the business and score some goals in doing it. And I just think that if, Tomo, you're absolutely right, if Arsenal slip up away at Tottenham and then you know, conceivably lose against Man City as well. And Liverpool and City keep up that form. That's a big gap forming midway through September to be 8 points behind with those teams looking like they are. But yeah, maybe be a nice way to say that we'll have a third team in the title race. And as you say, they'll probably go into second favourites if those results play out as we expected.
Do you know what I like about Liverpool, just before we move on from them as well, is the fact that they didn't really sign anyone. And so often you just get clubs like basically panic buying. And they lost out on Zubimendi, didn't they? They obviously wanted that defensive midfielder. But rather than panicking and going for someone who might not have fitted that exact profile, who wasn't their first choice, they've said, okay, no problem. We've got good players in that position anyway. And as Lauro mentioned, Ryan Gravenberch has come in and he looks like he's slotted in unbelievably. So it's quite nice basically to see that they've sort of not done what every other club does. Like when you look at the likes of Chelsea and Man United in this scenario, like they would just go and buy another target, wouldn't they? Whereas Liverpool have been patient and seem to be reaping the rewards. And I think they've got Bournemouth at home next week as well. So that's two home games against Forest and Bournemouth. So you fully expect them to make it 5 from 5.
Yeah, it's a great point actually on Zubimendi, because I remember Liverpool fans were going absolutely mad after he didn't sign, saying that like FSG were like neglecting the club and it would be an embarrassment if they didn't go and sign a number 6. But other teams in that situation, when you know that a club have missed out on their number one target and it's getting later in the transfer window, and you know the fee they were willing to spend, because everyone knows that these days with the amount of coverage that transfers get, you just get overinflated prices on other players that you didn't really even want as your first target. So fair play to Liverpool hierarchy for that. And you say it looks like Gravenberch is absolutely settling in there. I the only thing I'd say with Liverpool, I'm not sure on their depth. Interested to see what a couple of injuries would do, especially in that midfield. If you lost a McAllister or you lost a Gravenberch, how the likes of like your Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott, people like that would step up into the side. But that's all to come for them. And then Tomo, just a word on United. Obviously, was a bit of a damaging defeat before the international break. Came at a good time in regards to United. Looked like they needed the break, but it's been a lot of kind of media coverage about Ten Hag and the fact he only signed a 1-year extension, and United were obviously looking elsewhere in the summer. I was looking at their next sort of 5 games. It looks like he's going to have to put a run of wins together now in those fixtures. Otherwise, pressure's going to really start mounting, especially with Ronaldo's interview that's just landed as well.
Yeah, I don't know whether the pressure's mounting because of the Ronaldo interview. I think that's a little bit of just outside noise. That Ronaldo, obviously, he's got his new YouTube channel. I think him and Rio have been giving each other some interviews for each of their YouTube channels. And obviously, it creates headlines. But the only way for Ten Hag to sort of dampen these headlines, I guess, is to win games. But we've been poor all season, really. If you look at that Fulham game, we sort of scraped by. But actually, if you kind of... The first game of the season I'm talking about now, the Fulham game. And if you actually look at it, Fulham had chances and they just failed to take them. I think Harry Maguire got in the way of one breakaway. Fulham were basically poor. And then obviously Brighton went and beat us. And then, I mean, the Liverpool game, the less we talk about that, the better, to be honest. But there's just no surprise. It's depressing. I don't really want to go too much into detail about it, but there just doesn't seem to be any changes, nothing sort of positive, really.
I heard on the radio today that apparently it's just a matter of time before it's Ten Hag out and Southgate in. That's the way that Ineos and Sir Jim want to play it. So be interested in see if that unfolds.
Well, and also on his sort of Dean's new contract, actually, it was just an extension of his old contract. So United just took the plus 1 year option. There's no new terms. There's no sort of new negotiations or new sort of clauses in that contract. It's just exactly the same one, which makes you think, or on top of the fact that we were clearly looking for a new manager in the summer anyway. So it makes you think that, yeah, it is just a matter of time before something sort of part the parting of ways.
Ineos were probably set to sack him and then thought, right, get drubbed by City in the FA Cup final and then we can get rid of him, rubbing their hands together, and then just gone off, fuck's sake, gone and beat City, got a second trophy in 2 years and almost been like, well, we can't really sack you now. We'll have a look, see what's out there, and then just extend your deal with no extended terms for a year. But ultimately, you're not going to be our man. Southgate won. The only thing I'd say on that is the exact replica of what England fans want of more attacking, fluent football is exactly what is expected at Man United by Man United fans. And look, maybe it's been a decade now of that not happening, and there needs to be a sense of realism about what the club is now. But I think his pragmatic style of play would go down absolutely shocking at Old Trafford. Like, I know there's this whole piece about repairing the culture and getting standards up and things like that, but we've got people in place now to do that. I think you just need someone to come in as a head coach who actually is coaching the right style of play, whatever that looks like. But I certainly don't think for Man United that that's Southgate. But I know he's got big admirers like from Ashworth and people like that. But I think that would be a disaster, that move. But yeah, we'll see. Lunchtime Saturday against Southampton. Always a bit of a tricky one, the lunchtime game. And Southampton on no points themselves. Russell Martin under a little bit of pressure about not changing his style of play. So it'll be interesting to see how they go about that. But I think anything less than a comprehensive win for United would be very damaging for Ten Hag. Boys, let's move on to the EFL. And Lauro, Championship, another lunchtime game tomorrow, which I'm sure you'll be tuning into. Leeds versus Burnley. Two favourites for promotion out of the Championship. Both had their squads kind of decimated a little bit by transfers out. But is it too early to say that that's a six-pointer for both of those teams?
Yeah, I think the context of the league this year is, because I just think it's going to be really close. I've seen enough already to know there's not one standout team. I know Sunderland have won all four, but they're the only team to do so. And they've lost their best player. So I'm actually quietly confident with Leeds. I think we're going to be the best of a more average bunch this year. And although we have lost some big players, like you say, in Somerville and Rutter and Archie Gray, we haven't been decimated numerically. We've kept quite a lot of good players, and we've actually signed quite well as well, I think, with Rothwell and with Manos Solomon and Jaden Bogle, Joe Roldan coming back too. And we've just flipped the corner a little bit. Going away to Sheffield Wednesday and getting a win, big result, first home win at Elland Road last time out. I just get the feeling that we might end up 2 months down the line and Leeds are like at the top of the league and no one's really mentioned us, because we probably won't be as scintillating as perhaps we've been at times in recent years. But I think we'll be quite efficient with Daniel Farker at the helm there. And Matteo Joseph got his first goal in the last game as well, which the fans have been waiting for. We've sort of been trusted with that number nine shirt this year, and hopefully the first of many starting to repay the trust. And in terms of the game against Burnley at the weekend, that is at Allen Road, and I'd really fancy Leeds. I think Burnley, kind of a little bit opposite, started the season with just a joy of riches, if you like, and then sort of bit by bit they seem to have been pulled apart, and I think they have been decimated a little bit, and I think there's a big drop in quality as to how they opened the season against Luton when they thrashed them at Kenilworth Road to how they sit now. And, you know, we know what Scott Parker's like even early in the season when he doesn't feel he's got the right bunch that maybe he's been promised in the summer. So I see that as 3 points for Leeds. I don't think it's a six-pointer, but I would much, much more fancy in Leeds' prospects at the moment than Burnley's, to be honest with you.
And then at the top of the table of the Championship, because obviously Leeds are in fourth and Burnley in sixth, you've got Sunderland, who've started like an absolute train on 12 points, West Brom, and Watford, and then Blackburn as well, all in those playoff places. So some of the kind of leading protagonists there. And Sunderland, who are 4 from 4, they go away to Wayne Rooney's Plymouth, who are right down there. And Wazza already looks like he's struggling a bit with life down there, and it doesn't get any easier for them with Sunderland away. Then into League One, and Tomo, absolutely huge game on Monday night, I think it is actually. Birmingham, who you obviously covered on transfer deadline day, signed Jay Stansfield for a reported 15 million against Hollywood Wrexham, who are absolutely flying at the start of the season as well. And I think it's a sellout at Birmingham's ground and about 30,000 fans, and that's going to be a massive game for League One.
It's a good advert for the Pyramids, isn't it? But don't know, did we mention the Jay Stansfield one on the last podcast? I just think I almost lost my head when I know he's he scored quite a few goals in the Championship last season for them. And he's obviously a good player, definitely at that level. But fucking 15 million at League One. I think that the most expensive signing at that level was like 5 million before then, or maybe 4 million. But look, Birmingham have obviously, that's the sort of money that you spend, and it basically means promotion or nothing. You obviously fully expect them to go on to get promotion. But yeah, it's a big game. And the Hollywood owners, we know all about them. They're spending all the money they want to get in the Championship as well. So I'm looking forward to that one.
And then, Laurie, just to call out the top two in League One, we obviously just touched on Wrexham there, but the other side in second place is Stockport. And I think like last year, it was like first and second in League Two. I think the season before that might have been first and second in the National League. And we spoke about there not being too much of a gap between League Two and National League before, but it seems like they're just teams are now carrying on up through that National League up into the likes of League One now.
Yeah, I just think the depth of English football is becoming bigger. Like it's sort of the Football League used to be the be all and end all. Premier League, Championship, League One would be the gutter for the Championship and the promised land for League Two. Now there's some big, big players going to the National League. There's no FFP or whatever, so they're able to sort of accumulate expensively assembled squads and squads that can last. And like you say, we've seen that in Wrexham. We've seen that in Notts County, who are doing well in League Two. We've seen it in Stockport. And I mean, like Tom just said, Birmingham need to get promoted. You can't go and spend 50 million or whatever it is they've done in that league and not get promoted. But they've ran into Wrexham, who you're almost thinking are a banker to get promoted every year at the moment, and Stockport, who have got a manager that I keep going on about in Dave Challoner, who just doesn't not get promoted. And there's only two automatic spots in that league. So that'll be really, really interesting to see how it plays out, because you can spend what you want. I mean, 15 million on Jay Stansfield. He was in that league the year before last with Exeter. And I know he's a good player, but he didn't exactly pull up trees there. So I think he's got a lot to do to prove the price tag. I know he's a young player and he can grow into it as well. But if you're spending that in League One, you want results now. And you'd hope between Alfie May, him, and even Lyndon Dyke, Scottish international, they'll have a lot of firepower up front. But so do the likes of Wrexham, Stockport, and a few other teams in there, that won't be too easy. But that game on Monday night, I think it's at St Andrews against Wrexham, will just be one of the biggest games probably in League One history.
Yeah, definitely. And then in League Two, Doncaster are top. They lost last night against Harrogate. So that just shows what League Two is all about. Harrogate, who are down near the bottom, winning at home against Doncaster. And just a nod as well to Gillingham boss, Mark Bonner, who's been on the pod before, picked up manager of the month for League Two in his first month back. So congrats to him and the Gillingham boys. Tomo, were you wanting to come in there?
No, I was just having a look at Gillingham's run of results there, and they did lose against Doncaster a couple of days ago, or last weekend, didn't they? So, but hopefully they can get back to winning ways.
Isn't it like the dreaded like manager of the month curse as well? Like when you get the award, your team normally goes on like and loses the next game. I'm sure there's something in that, but hopefully not for Mark. They're home to Tranmere this weekend, so hopefully he can pick up all three there. Right, let's move to the National League.
I was just going to say, I just reported on the Premier League manager of the month, and it was Fabian Hertzler, the Brighton boss. And I'm just sitting there thinking, what has Pep Guardiola got to do to get that? Do you know what I mean? Just wins all the games.
Do it at Brighton.
Honestly.
To be fair, they beat United, didn't they, Brighton, and then drew with Arsenal, probably should have won that game as well with the red card, but they smashed Everton and he's new to the league. But Arne Slot might be sitting there thinking as well, but there we go. Laurie, National League, Yeovil obviously Yeovil seem to be in a position at the minute where they're winning away and losing at home. Went and had a ding-dong win last weekend and then slipped up midweek. Do you want to just talk us through them?
Yeah, well, I mean, Yeovil have won 4, lost 4 of their opening 8 games. And the annoying thing is we're kind of winning away from home in the games that maybe we're not so fancied in. And we're dropping all of our points at Huish Park, which is not normally the way with us. Certainly wasn't the last time we're in this league. when we got relegated the season before last, we only won one game away from home all season. I mean, we've won three already this season, scoring, I think, something like 10 goals. So in that regard, it's good. But there's a lot of much of a muchness in the league. I think you can see that with results throughout it. No one's going to run away with it, I don't think, this year. We've, you know, well documented there's no sort of big boy in terms of like a Wrexham or a Notts County this season. And it will be the team that can be the most consistent, which is what we aren't at the moment. But what Yeovil are is a promoted team. And if you had said you'll be ninth, 1 point outside the playoffs after your first eight games, I think we'd have taken it. We had a fantastic game at Fylde last weekend. I think they're just on the coast up there near Blackpool. It was a long journey for the fans. 2-0 down at half time. I was watching it on the stream. We were getting absolutely battered. And then Mark Cooper just changed it and said, right, we're going to play basically a 3-6-1 formation. And we managed to score 4 second half goals in really good style. So it was disappointing to go from that to losing 1-0 at home on a rainy Tuesday night at Hewish Park to a Solihull team who were really well equipped, to be fair to them. And they scored a good goal. One that I haven't seen at Hewish Park in a while, a sort of lob from the edge of the area. And, you know, they were a good outfit, but they're below us in the table. So it just shows anyone can beat anyone really in this league. And hopefully Yeovil can click into gear and stop dropping the points where we've actually been playing okay, but not found that ruthless edge. And we're home again tomorrow against Altrincham. So hopefully we can put a show on and put a performance in for the home fans, because overall it's been a good season so far.
I think as well, a bit of a kind of caveat around Yeovil's losses is that they lost to Gateshead, which obviously you went to, who sit top, and Yeovil were in that game for spells. Second place is Rochdale, who we lost to at home, but I think we dominated over 90 minutes, and then they scored a great goal. And then Hartlepool, first game of the season, who are in the playoffs as well, who obviously a decent side, and I think Yeovil did okay in that game as well, didn't they? And Hartlepool took over, but we're not losing against teams that I think we're expecting to win. I know home games you want to win, but if your losses are against those sides in and around that top seven, then I still think Yeovil will do well. And Altrincham at home this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, they're below us, but they were in the playoffs last season. They're another good side with some good players, and that would be a difficult game. Like I said, anyone could beat anyone, but you're right. We're not dropping points against teams we shouldn't, but we are dropping points in performances that should be bearing more fruit for us. So 3 points tomorrow, we'll be back in the playoffs and all will be rosy again. That's the fine line that you sit on as a football fan and in judging your team and your manager, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Right, boys, that's all we got time for today. We'll obviously be back next week where we'll review all of those games that we've covered. Be interesting as well. I think Man City's court case starts next week. I think that's up to 130 charges now from what was originally 115. So be interested to chat through each of those in detail. And yeah, we'll look ahead to the upcoming fixture as well. But pleasure as always. Cheers, chaps.
Cheers, lads. 1, 2, 3.